Live from Sacramento, California.
Woke up quick at about noon.
Featuring Damian Barling.
Yes, I absolutely still love Russell Westbrook. So what?
And Kenny Caraway.
Sometimes you're really just vibing out.
This is D-Lo and KC.
I'm the street's voice out west. Legendary self-made progress. Last time that I checked.
On ESPN 1320.
And welcome into the Thursday edition of D-Lo and KC here on ESPN 1320. Your man's Kenny got me fired up here.
He goes,
okay.
We
don't have to, right? We will. At some point, we will. Today probably isn't the day.
We can do the whole hour.
The whole hour, player, we could do a whole week. Kenny says to me right before the show started, okay, just real quick, because we were listening to the new Kendrick Lamar Busta Rhymes song. He was like, okay, real quick. This is a two-minute conversation. Okay, when it's all said and done, Drake might be the greatest rapper of all time. And I'm like, kid, what are you doing? Like, how are you going to start this conversation now with the show about to start?
Hey, man, you know, one of these days, because, you know, yesterday was the first day since July 22nd that there was no baseball, basketball, football, hockey. And I think, well, there was soccer yesterday, so they didn't count that. But first day since July 22nd.
Four major sports. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
And typically, you would think there would be nothing to talk about. We could do the whole show on why Drake may end up being the greatest rapper of all time when it's all said and done.
We probably could. Except for the fact that it's 49ers week.
Yeah.
It's always 40s Niners
always.
Week. It's Seahawks week.
Yeah.
And Matt Kolsky. We can have Matt Kolsky weigh in on the greatest rapper of all time argument.
Absolutely.
I would really love Ray Ratto's opinion on this, but Kolsky will be with us at the top of the 1 o'clock hour. And then Jessica Mendoza, she's going to be with us.
Ask her, too.
I bet. Bring that back. We're going to have to bring that back. She's a Southern California girl. She's about our age.
That's a good question.
That'd be a good question
about
for
it
her.
Is, for me to say this is kind of out of my demographic because we're the same demo. We're the same. We grew up the same way. Hov is number one. He's number one, just like Jordan is number one.
You're saying
period.
That so definitively. It's wild. Like,
nah, Hov is number one. Hov is number one. Jordan's number one. But I always equate Drake to like LeBron. When it's all said and done, LeBron is going to have the record books. He's going to have every number in the record books except for 6-0 in the finals. When it's all said and done, Drake is going to have all the records.
But can we acknowledge that Jay-Z put out trash too?
When?
Excuse me.
You said trash.
Bro.
You said trash.
Bro.
So when?
Kingdom Come is trash.
Kingdom Come isn't good. It's not good. It's not good. It's not trash.
It's trash adjacent if it's not trash. It is as close to trash as you could get.
That was him wearing the 45 jersey, man. Come on, man. That was him versus the Magic in 95 wearing the 45 jersey. Get off his back.
Okay. In my lifetime, what is that? Is that the number 12 jersey when someone stole the number 23?
Absolutely not. That's
in my life.
23.
Okay.
That's 88, 89 against the Pistons. Like, what are you talking about?
I can't believe you started this conversation 2 minutes before the show started. Like, I can't believe you started this. We'll address it more later. And if you haven't heard the new Busta Rhymes Kendrick Lamar song, we encourage you to go. Oh man, it's got some Jackson 5 in there.
It's technically Busta Rhymes featuring Kendrick and Michael Jackson. That's the official title for it. Yeah, he's got Mike Jackson on there.
It's pretty dope, man. It is pretty dope. Kenny been fired up all week as we've got the Seahawks coming up. Of course, we've got game day coming up on Sunday. This is the ultimate rivalry, man, and this is fun. We started to talk about this yesterday. I feel like we got a smidge bit sidetracked. Like, when did this start? Like, when did this rival? What are you doing?
I'm hyped, man. You know what I'm saying? I got a shadow box up in here.
Bro,
man,
this isn't a TV show. Like,
come on, baby. We on that Zoom, no? So
we've got.
Let's go.
So this is
let's
this
go,
is.
Man.
This is the point that we've gotten to with D'Lo and KC, is now Kenny knows that these clips go out on social media, so now he starts to do stuff that he knows is specifically for the clip to go out there on social
media. What time it is, man. Come on, man. I'm ready, man. Can I kick return this week? I could be on the kick return team or on the kickoff team, you know, and just run down there. Let's go.
And to quote the Hall of Famer, Warren Moon, hey, bro, calm down. Calm down.
It's Seahawks week. Calm down, man. I need this one.
I love that you even disregarded the Hall of Famer when it comes to calming down.
Yeah, man.
No one gets more amped up No one gets more amped up for a rivalry game than you. I can't wait for Ohio State and Michigan. Like, I cannot wait for that game to take place. Because I want to see if you, to quote the great, was it Marvin Bagley or Harry Giles? I can't remember which one said it, but I want you to bring that same energy. Bring that same energy.
I don't think they have the same chance that the Niners have against the Seahawks.
God, I hope the 49ers have a much better chance than Michigan does against Ohio State in a month or so. But no one gets up for rivalries like you do. And this was it. Like, I know the division and all of that, but was it Sherman and Crabtree? Is that where this like escalated to? Okay, this is a battle.
There was a lot of weird stuff. I mean, it came in already ready-made with Harbaugh and Carroll.
Okay.
Like, that's where it came from. They both dominated the Pac-10 at that time, and then they brought their act to the NFL. And I think Carroll came first. So just like in college, Carroll was dominating USC. Harbaugh came into Stanford, and he like just came out of nowhere. So then Carroll left, goes to the NFL. Harbaugh comes to San Francisco, and it looks like he's chasing him down again. Like, it really felt like Harbaugh had something for Carroll. Like, he was just going to chase him down wherever he went. And I think the Carroll's team wasn't – in 2011, they definitely weren't good. They were like 8-8 or something like that. And it got to a Week 15 matchup in Seattle. I remember the Seahawks crowd was turned up. They might have had an outside chance of making the playoffs, but it was like a lot of, you know, they needed a lot of help going into the final 2 weeks. But they were charged up. The Niners were 12-3 at the time or something like that. I remember the Niners hadn't allowed a 100-yard rusher all year. I don't think they allowed a rushing TD all year. We're in Week 15. That 2011 defense, one of the great defense I've ever seen in my life. And the beast mode and the Seahawks, the 12s, they were charged up to get 100 yards, to have a rushing TD, and to beat the 49ers. And they got 100 yards, they got the rushing TD, but they didn't have Russell Wilson yet. And I think it was Tavarius Jackson was the quarterback. Close game. The Seahawks had took the lead late in the game. Alex Smith drove them back down. They took the lead back, and with like under a minute to go, strip sack by Larry Grant, got the Niners the win. He went to the crowd where the Niners were. They poured Skittles on him.
Yeah, you know what I mean? That's
and
it.
And it started there. And then the next year,
you can't do that in 2020. By the way, you cannot do that in 2020.
You definitely can't do that. But then the next year, it seems like Carroll said, I've had enough of this Harbaugh guy. He got Russell Wilson. They beat the crap out of the 49ers in Week 15, I think, in Seattle on Sunday Night Football in the rain. And it was on. It was on from then and there. They missed each other in the playoffs that year by one game. Your man Matt Ryan actually had one of his Matty Ice moments. They were actually up like 20-0 in that divisional round game. The Falcons were. Seahawks came all the way back, took the lead. They actually put too much time on, had too much time left on the clock. Matty Ice got him down there for a game-winning field goal, or else it would have been Niners Seahawks at the stick in the NFC Championship game that year. We didn't get it then. We got it the next year, and it's been on ever since, man. But it was that 2011 game. That's the one where it started to pop off between those two.
Pete Carroll, Pete Carroll alone, the Seahawks, they were 7-9 that year. Mm. And that was the last year Pete Carroll finished below 500. That was the last year the Seattle Seahawks finished below 500, that 2011 season. And they've only finished with single-digit wins once during that time frame. And it was when they were 9-7 3 years ago in the 2017 season.
That's a hell of a run, man. I got to tip my hat to him, man. That's a hell of a run.
Bro, Pete Carroll is a... I mean, is it a stretch to say, like, he's a hands-down Hall of Famer?
I think he's definitely a hands-down Hall of Famer. Absolutely.
I mean, I don't even know that I've given his, like, accomplishments true context. Like, his records as a head coach, even during his time in New England, are phenomenal.
Yeah, they were pretty solid in New England, too.
I mean, he was only there three
Parcells
seasons.
Or after?
10-6, it was after, right? Because his last season was 99,
gotcha.
Which leads us to Or was it, so did it go Parcells, Belichick?
I thought that's what it was. I thought it was Carroll, last... Parcells, Belichick. I thought, his... or Belichick, no. Who was it? Belichick was with the Jets where he took the job and then went
that's
away,
it.
Right?
That's what it was. Yeah. That's what it was. So it was, yeah, because he was 8-8. Pete Carroll was 8-8 in 1999, which leads us to Bill Belichick, which you're hearing a lot about that 2000 season this year, because this is the first time the Patriots have been .. since 20, since 2000, Bill Belichick's first season with the Patriots.
Was that immediate where Belichick was going to take the Jets job, took it, and then had a reverse, of course, overnight, declined it, and then took the Patriots job? Is that how that went?
It was something like that. Yeah, they did the I don't remember what it was called. It's going to sound
stupid.
The
two bills?
That's what it was. I was going to call it Bill.
I got to see that. I hadn't seen that. But
I was
going
to call it Bill and Bill. But yeah, that's essentially what it was, and it involved the Jets, the Patriots, that whole thing there. But you're we're taken back to the Jets thing where Pete Carroll wasn't very good, but he was really good with the Patriots.
I just want to ask you a question. You just mentioned.
And he was great at USC.
Absolutely. One of the all time greats at USC.
Legal or not.
Yeah. I think that is so ridiculous. Not that you said it, but on their head. But yeah,
for sure.
I know exactly what you mean. But I wanted to ask you, because you broke down, they've had double-digit win seasons. We're going on 10 years now, or 9 years, or something like that. Only season that wasn't double digits was 9-7.
Yep.
Do you think they've underachieved? Super Bowl victory, two appearances, and they haven't made an NFC championship game since they lost in the Super Bowl.
Correct. They've lost. They lost in the divisional round to the Panthers, to the Falcons. The 9-7 year, they missed the playoffs. They lost in the wild card, actually, to the Dallas Cowboys, which is, wow, the Cowboys won a playoff game. That's weird to think about. And then they lost to the Packers. So did they underachieve? No, but, man, that second Super Bowl sure is a game changer, man.
I would say I don't want to say underachieved, because that means what they did isn't great. But if I was – I would feel like they didn't fulfill their potential. They had
winning
one of the great
this...
defenses of all time for about 3 or 4 years, and you get one Super Bowl out of that?
They lost in the divisional round in their previous two playoff appearances. Pete Carroll's only missed the playoffs twice, the 9-7 year in 2017 that we referred to, and the 2011 year when they were 7-9. They missed the playoffs that year as well. Pete Carroll's first year, they were 7-9. I think everybody remembers that quite well. Beast mode led to the win over New Orleans, which led to a loss against the Chicago Bears in the divisional round. They wound up losing to the Atlanta Falcons. We'll step out. We'll come back. We've got a lot more to talk about. This conversation is worth continuing only because we're talking about Pete Carroll, but Peter King said something here on 1320 when he was talking to Damon Ratto and Kolsky a couple of days ago that really got my attention. I want to play the clip for you in full context so you can hear what he said about your boy, Kyle Shanahan. You
better put some respect on his name.
We'll do that as we continue here. It's D'Lo and KC on Sacramento's number one sports station, ESPN 1320.
D'Lo and KC. D'Lo and KC continues on ESPN 1320.
Hey, look at Charlie. Charlie already put his vote in. It sounds like with the rejoin that he says Drake is on his way to being the greatest.
Okay, stop it. I don't believe that's what Charlie said. And by the quick glance of our social media here, at D'Lo and KC, it doesn't appear anybody is saying that. You could bet that as soon as we went to commercial break, all of the conversation about the Seahawks and the 49ers ended, and we went back to the conversation about KC proclaiming that Drake may wind up the greatest rapper of all time. Quick note here, by the way. If you want to learn more about Kenny Caraway, well, of course, you can listen here daily. We encourage you to do that. But if you want to listen to two of the best storytellers and interviewers talk to Kenny Caraway, check out the latest edition of the Deuce and Moe podcast. It is available here on the Be Heard platform on radio.com or wherever you get podcasts from. Just search Be Heard or search Deuce and Moe. And that episode that you guys did together was really, really good. I actually learned a little bit about you, man. That's great stuff.
I appreciate it, man. The host is what makes the interview, man. They did a great job. I enjoyed being on their show, man. It's good, man. That's the Be Heard family, man. That's how it goes down on the Be Heard family.
I've always said, man, aspiring journalists should listen to Deuce and Mo do interviews, because a great interviewer makes the conversation. One, it's a conversation and not an interview, and it makes it about the person they're talking to. Mm-hmm. Whereas a lot of people, particularly in this business, they make it about them, and they want to tell everybody what they've done, and they want to, you know, impress the interviewee and all of these different sorts of things. But Deuce and Mo do a great, great job of...
Man, I had a blast with them, man. That was really cool.
Yeah, it's a really, really good conversation. Again, the Deuce and Mo podcast, I can't recommend it enough. Of course, with Kenny on it, it's just something that you absolutely got to listen to. You'll learn a lot more. Because here, it's a little bit more frantic. You know, podcasts, I really love doing podcasts because you could just sink into a conversation. Mm-hmm. Radio, it's a little bit more fast-paced. And while we've got this show structured to really give it time to breathe, that we can hang out, we could talk, we know that we're speaking to a kind of a broader audience than you do with podcasts. With podcasts, people kind of seek you out, and they're genuinely interested in hearing specifically what you have to say. When we're on the radio, no one really stumbles across you on a podcast. Like, that's kind of hard to do.
You had to go find that. You were
somebody,
looking for it.
You're right. Somebody is flipping through the dials here, you know, driving in their car. They could stumble across you on the radio. And if you're, like, waist deep in a conversation, you're like, wait, what is going on here on this radio show? That gets a little bit more difficult. But it's one of the things that I love about podcasting, and it's why you see so many – that's why you see so many radio show hosts now also hosting podcasts, because it moves at a slightly different pace. But that was great job by you. Great job by Deuce and Mo. So everybody, go check that out. And of course, Kenny was fired up for Seahawks week on the podcast.
Absolutely.
Because why wouldn't he be? You know, I saw this story today, you know, while we were talking about the Seahawks, and we were really talking about Pete Carroll. And I want you to hear this clip from Peter King. He was with Damon Ratto and Kolsky here on ESPN 1320 earlier in the week. And I want you to hear what he had to say. It wasn't about Pete Carroll, though. It was about Kyle Shanahan.
You better watch his mouth. Don't be talking about my boy, Young Shanny.
Yeah, you clearly didn't hear the clip. I'm curious to get your thoughts on it. I do want to mention this, though, before we get to that clip of Peter King. And Matt Kolsky of Damon Ratto and Kolsky is going to join us at 1. Jessica Mendoza is going to be with us at 1:20. We spoke last week. I think it was Friday, because I honestly think it was like 2:05. We signed off. We're off for the weekend. And the alert comes in that Antonio Brown's going to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. It's like, okay, I think we had spent about 10 minutes talking about Antonio Brown winding up with the Seattle Seahawks.
Yeah.
From what it looks like, Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk wrote that the Seahawks, they did their due diligence. They did all their homework with Antonio Brown. They checked into the process, looked into adding him to his roster, and they just decided they weren't, quote, comfortable with adding Antonio Brown to the team.
That's interesting, man, because that, we talked about, like you just said, all the rage was he was going to Seattle. It looked like a done deal or whatever. And then in that same day that we kind of had that lengthy conversation, I saw a couple of tweets and a couple of people, one specifically from Joe Fan. He used to work for the 49ers. Now he works for the Seattle Seahawks. He's like a media, I don't know his official title, but either way, like he works for the Seahawks. And he had a tweet talking about, man, disappointed in the Seahawks organization for even considering bringing Antonio Brown in. And he was really critical of the idea of him coming in. There was a lot of people that supported that. And yeah, right after that, you know, they're out of it. So maybe their due diligence and not being comfortable was a result of kind of a little bit of the public backlash they were going to get for bringing him in. That could have very well been the case.
Yeah, it's worth, I guess, kind of lost in all of this because everybody gets excited that it's Tom Brady and it's Antonio Brown. I know Antonio Brown he's able to work out now. Like he was working out. He can't play because he's still suspended.
Right.
And in addition to still being suspended, there's an open investigation. There's like a sexual assault. Like that's been kind of lost in all of this.
Yeah,
I think partly because of who he was signed by, because he was signed by not necessarily the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but Tom Brady. And now you got Brady and you got Gronk and you got Antonio Brown and you got Leonard Fournette and you have this, you know, this potential 2014 AFC Pro Bowl team on a 2020 NFC roster. So I get the appeal of it, but you know, just because he finishes his 8-week suspension, that doesn't necessarily mean that he's cleared to play. Yeah. Like, there are still, it still appears that there are things that have to be navigated with the NFL, and I think that was a frustration with Antonio Brown's. It was a frustration with Antonio Brown because he tweeted as much, and I think it was a frustration with Antonio Brown's representatives, and that the league hasn't necessarily wrapped up this so-called investigation, and they could very well come Monday say, no, you can't play because we need to dig into this a little bit further.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's a real possibility. And even when you talk about, you know, the possibilities going to Seattle, once again, I remember last week, I think they somebody, or I don't know if it was multiple people, I don't want to make it bigger than what it was, but I know somebody kind of pressed Russell Wilson about that, about, like, you know, how are you advocating for this dude? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, what's that all about? And Russell kind of, you know, kind of skirted around it or whatever. But from between that question to Russell and Joe Fan's tweets and some of the other things I've seen from some of the fans that were tweeting out or whatever the case may be, people were kind of holding the Seahawks to the fire for the idea of bringing him in. And I think at the end of the day, they just kind of fell back. They're like, man, it's not worth it. So,
and you and I said this to begin with. Is Antonio Brown a defensive back and we missed it? Because this is
not that I know of.
To me, they have one of the best young up-and-coming receivers in the game. And I've clearly have this vicious man crush on DK Metcalf that is not going to go away anytime soon. I didn't think into it. And you've got Tyler Lockett, by the way, who had like 4,000 yards just last Sunday or last Monday against the Cardinals or Sunday night. And so it's like, yeah, I don't know why this was even a conversation. Like, if this was J.J. Watt out there, okay. If this was a defensive player, period, out there,
right?
Okay. But not Antonio Brown. Like, I didn't get that. And I wonder, we're obviously, for a number of reasons, significantly closer to what goes on with the Seattle Seahawks than we are with what goes on with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I wonder if they're facing this type of response from some of their media out there in Tampa Bay. I have to imagine they're not, only because they see themselves as viable Super Bowl contenders with Tom Brady there. And if they're like, if we got to take Antonio Brown's crazy ass on, then we've got to take Antonio Brown's crazy ass on.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I could be wrong, man, but it doesn't seem like they're in the same type of fishbowl that Seattle is. Like, they're crazy about the Seahawks up there. Absolutely crazy. So everything is a big deal. And I don't know if they're in that same predicament in Tampa Bay. I don't know. Couldn't tell you.
For those who didn't know, like, Antonio Brown worked out with Russell Wilson, and he worked out with Geno Smith. Mm-hmm. And I know that sounds funny, but Geno Smith, believe it or not, is the backup quarterback for the Seattle Seahawks. So that's where a lot of the Antonio Brown Seattle stuff came from. And Russell Wilson, I think, has openly talked about Antonio Brown, not in terms of when he was being pressed on how could you advocate for this, but in more friendly situations. Mm-hmm. I think he's talked about Antonio Brown, and there were all sorts of reports that he was talking about him privately to the team, but they've obviously, you know, backed off, and he wound up with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, and, you know, we'll see what happens in that regard.
Yeah.
We spent some time a few moments ago. For those that are just tuning in, welcome. We appreciate you being here. If you missed the beginning of the show when Kenny was shadow boxing for no apparent reason, you can use the rewind feature.
Very good reason.
Because it's Seahawks week. You could go to the radio.com app, use the rewind feature. Rewind is a really cool name for DVR, as Kenny's neighbor across the street is home.
You can find out when he comes home every day.
You can find out. Yeah. I wonder where this guy works, that he has a truck that has to make that noise. And I wonder if this guy is aware yet that he is a character on an ESPN radio show.
Probably not. I haven't talked to the guy, so I don't know. I know my next door neighbor, shout out to him, he says he listens to the show. He didn't know I was Kenny Caraway. And so, like, one day he asked me, he's like, what do you do? And I was like, oh, well, you know, I got a show on the radio on 1320. He's like, that's you? I thought that might have been you, but I wasn't sure. Da-da-da. So, yeah, he listens. Big Bills fan, man. What's up, big dog?
Oh, we appreciate it, man. We appreciate everybody who listens both on 1320, on radio.com, wherever you're listening, man. We just appreciate you being here, being a part of the show on radio.com. You can use the rewind feature. Scan back to the beginning of the show. We DVR the show for you. And radio.com is also the exclusive home of our podcast. Now, I had mentioned Damon Ratto and Kolsky. Matt Kolsky going to join us at 1 o'clock. They had a conversation with Peter King, as they do each week. And we spent some time talking about Pete Carroll and what is very clear to both you and I, Pete Carroll's Hall of Fame accolades. Mm-hmm. You asked if they left a little bit on the table. That second Super Bowl, losing that Super Bowl is a game changer. Like, they, not a game changer, but losing that second Super Bowl certainly looks different because now you have one instead of having the very rare back-to-back. And, of course, the way that they – well, the way that they lost it, just brutal.
All-timer.
Just brutal.
Yeah.
And so I was listening to Peter King talking about Kyle Shanahan. And I want you to hear – this is a lengthy clip because I didn't want to isolate it and say, oh, look at what Peter King said. I wanted to present the entire clip with its full context. So this is Peter King for like two straight minutes talking about what he saw with the San Francisco 49ers run game this past Sunday versus Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots.
Here's what, you know, Sunday night when I just go back over these games and I just look at every game and try to figure out what I'm going to do. And I didn't know really that I was going to get Garoppolo, but right after the game, I just started looking at things and I said, holy cow. I said, you could argue that the fourth and fifth running backs on this team after Mostert, after McKinnon, after Tevin Coleman, you could argue the fourth and fifth backs are Wilson and a guy nobody has any idea who he is named Jermichael Hasty. But in my opinion, if, you know, when Kyle Shanahan got on that plane and he sat there and I'm sure at some point he looked at the numbers, he had to look up at John Lynch at some point and said, John, do you realize that Wilson and Hasty gained 169 yards and averaged 6.5 yards a carry against Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots in Foxborough, Massachusetts? That is just, that's one of the feats of the year. It's just, it's tremendous. But it just goes to show you that, look, I'm sure that every San Francisco fan, when the game against Miami happened, and the Dolphins are prancing off the field, a bad Dolphins team, you all think, prances off the field after putting up 43 on the 49ers and winning by 26. And you just say, that is, you know, it's wait till next year for the 49ers. You know, Kyle Shanahan, the reason why he is, and again, this is going to sound really like I'm overplaying my hand on Shanahan, but why he has a chance. And I mean a chance. Put that in italics. He has a chance to be the young Bill Belichick. You know, this generation's Belichick. He's got a chance. Is that he just figures out a way. And he says to Bobby Turner, hey, Bobby, you know, get your running backs ready. And then, by the way, go find a couple more that we might have to use if these guys get hurt. And Bobby Turner just gets them ready. And they end up playing really well. So, I don't know. My hat's off to the 49ers, to the coaching staff, and to those players for what they did in Foxborough.
That's Peter King right wow. there, courtesy of Damon Ratto and Kolsky. That was yesterday, I believe, here on ESPN 1320. What do you think of that?
Man, look, I've always felt, I mean, I didn't equate it to Belichick or anything like that, but I always felt that Kyle Shanahan was special. I just thought he was a special football mind, at the very least offensively, right? You saw him at every stop, what they did in Washington when RG3 was there, what he did in Houston, what he was able to do in Cleveland, what he did in Atlanta. You know, when the Niners hired him as head coach, I was like, they got one, man. They got one. From day one, I just fully believed in his abilities. Now, the things that you just never know until you're put into those situations is his ability to lead men through dark times, through tough times. And that's what I talked about at the beginning of this season when injuries happen, coming off a Super Bowl loss. What was he going to be able to do? That was the other level of him that nobody had known. Nobody knew. He hadn't experienced that. And initially, I was a little tough on him. He struggled in that Philadelphia game and the Miami game. I was hard. I said, maybe he's not that guy to be able to do this. But Peter King is right. What we've seen the last 2 weeks, at the very least, shows me that he's growing into that and he is capable of doing that. Even when I said he couldn't do it or he didn't look like he was able to do it, Mike Tomlin style and all this other stuff, I even said at that time, I was like, look, this is the first time he's kind of ever faced with that. Sometimes you learn on the job. Sometimes you learn through experience. Sometimes you go through things, you fail, and you say, ah, okay, this is how I got to do it next time. And I don't know. I'm not here to say that that was such a quick turnaround. We're in two games. He said I did something wrong and then fixed it. I'm not trying to make it that deep. I'm just saying, like, he had to dig down, figure out ways. And right now, it looks like he's got it figured out to be able to keep this team in it. Just keep them in it. You're not healthy. You're not at full strength. You don't have all your guys. There's guys moving in and out, practices, in and out of the lineup every week. But figure out a way to be there at the end of the day. And Kyle Shanahan is looking like he's ready to pass that test.
Looking at, I was trying to equate, because he said something there that, you know, and I'm picking apart what Peter King said there about a young Bill Belichick. A young Bill Belichick, actually, he wasn't what he would become, but I'm thinking about, I'm looking at the young Bill Belichick in Cleveland.
Right.
He was 6-10 his first year, 7-9, 7-9. Believe it or not, Cleveland was once 11-5, 1994, and then his last season there with 5-11. We know that Kyle Shanahan so far, 6-10, 4-12, 13-3, and then where the San Francisco 49ers lay out at 4-3. We all know the accolades for Bill Belichick and the New England Patriots, but I can tell you, after doing the same exercise with Pete Carroll, pulling up the Patriots records under Bill Belichick, one after the other after another, it is really stunning to see. The last time this team finished with single-digit wins, they were 9-7. And it was in 2002.
Wow.
And the year before, they won the Super Bowl. And the year after, by the way, they won the Super Bowl. And then the year after that, they won the Super Bowl also. So, I mean, it's just stunning to look at this. They were 11-5 that famous year without Tom Brady and missed the freaking playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it is just stunning to see what Bill Belichick accomplished in the league. And that is, you know, it just, to me, it puts even into more perspective how really great what Pete Carroll has done in Seattle has been.
Yeah. Look, this may be the only nice thing I say about the Seahawks and that organization for the rest of this week. Maybe for the rest of the season. I don't know. But that is what I want Kyle Shanahan, John Lynch, and his 49ers franchise to strive for.
Yeah.
To be what the Seahawks have been for the last 10 years. You're not going to win the Super Bowl every year. You're not going to get to the Super Bowl every year. You're not going to get to the NFC Championship every year. But every single year, Seattle's there. Seattle's in the discussion. They have an opportunity. And that is where I want the 49ers to go. And I think that's where they're at. I think this is the group that has them there. They don't win the Super Bowl this year. That would suck, obviously. You want them to win every year. But I'm confident in the direction that this franchise, with Kyle Shanahan and John Lynch, are in great hands to be in the discussion every single year. And that's, I'm trying to be Seattle-like in that respect as a 49er fan. Absolutely.
At D'Lo and KC on Twitter, if you want to take part in the conversation on the phone lines as well, they're open for you, 916-349-1320. Matt Kolsky, we'll ask him about this conversation when he joins us at the top of the 1 o'clock hour, and Jessica Mendoza will be with us at 1:20 for likely our very final Major League Baseball conversation of the season. Quan Alexander and Jimmy Ward back at practice today.
That's a surprise.
Is it? Jimmy Ward?
I didn't think Quan would be back and Jimmy. I didn't know what. Jimmy came out so abruptly last week. I was like, what is that all about? You know what I mean? Out of nowhere. So I didn't know we were going to see him this week. That's big. Definitely didn't see Quan coming back this week. That's
so
big.
Jimmy, like, we were both, we were knocked over when we found out Jimmy Ward wasn't playing. He got hurt at practice.
Oh, it wasn't
a lingering injury from the game. He got a little banged up at practice. That's what caused him to miss the Patriots game, and he's back at practice today. We mentioned Quan Alexander. He's back as well. It looks like Jordan Reed is going to be a go.
That could be big time.
As is Tevin Coleman. So
that could be big time. Look, man, I'm almost getting nervous about something, Damian. I'm almost getting nervous.
Uh-oh.
Because
you were confident. You were shadow boxing it a minute ago.
I'm definitely
what are we
confident,
nervous
but,
about?
But let me explain it here, because This should be such easy work for Kyle Shanahan in the 49ers offense. It should be such a sure thing. It's making me nervous.
It should be such easy work for
them that it's like, dang, maybe Seattle might play the game in their life or something like that. Because I'm just looking at it. I'm like, I want somebody to show me where there could be a problem. I can't see where there could be a problem against this team on offense. They should slice them up. Jordan Reed will be back. Come on, man. Tevin Coleman might be back. Come on, man. It should be such easy work. I'm like, it should be so easy. I'm starting to get nervous.
The 49ers offense should have no problem with this abysmal and approaching historically bad Seattle Seahawks defense.
Not at all. Not at all. And it's to the point where I don't even want to say it no more. I want to big up that defense. Right, guys? They're the number two defense in PFF.
No, that's, you know what I'm saying? Did you ever start looking that up? That is, you read that wrong. You absolutely read that wrong. You had to have. Are you going to force me to change? Are you messing with me? Because you did not read that.
It's facts.
No, it's not
at
facts.
At least according to the people in Seattle, it's facts. No, I didn't fact check it. But look, I'm going to start bigging them up because I don't even want to talk bad about them no more. Hey, they might get Jamal Adams back. You know what I'm saying? That'll change things. You know? I mean, look, it should be so easy. I don't even want to speak life into it no more.
Who's the defensive coordinator there again?
Oh, Cameron
Jr. I know.
Not good. He is
another one of those guys that I just don't get. Like, what defense did he have? I mean, he was a great defensive player. But what defense did he ever have as a coach, as a coordinator, where you go, whoo, man, the Ken Norton Jr. team, boy, watch out.
I have no idea. I have no clue.
I did. But hey, look. Because I don't think it exists.
Damien, no, you got it wrong. He's a great defensive coordinator. He's great.
Okay.
The guy's a wizard on the defensive end. You know, you got to respect it. You got to be ready. He's a wizard.
Okay, will you stop this? We stop this reverse psychology where you try to – you try to convince yourself that this is a quality defense. But here you say what could they do? What do we got to be nervous about? It should be an easy walk for the San Francisco 49ers offense. Well, the 49ers offense is good. You're going to need, as actually Peter King just said a minute ago, we're going to again need. We don't have running back number one or two. We're going to need 3 and 4 and potentially 5. We're going to need to see plays for Brandon Ayuk. We know that Debo Samuel is not going to be around, so we're going to need to see those Debo Samuel-like that have now become Brandon Ayuk-like plays where they're runs, pitches, flip passes. We're going to have to see the same with George Kittle. We're going to need to be able to see Jimmy Garoppolo work up that Seattle Seahawks secondary a little bit.
Yeah.
But here's – if you want a reason to be concerned – here's the one reason I can give you. They lost.
Mm-hmm.
They're coming off a loss for the first time this season. And, you know, the saving grace might be Russell Wilson made mistakes in that game. And Russell Wilson doesn't make very many mistakes, period. And he made a lot of them in that game. And he made some of them very, very late into that game. But a lot of the talk is you had it. If you're that Seattle, you had it. Russell Wilson did everything that Russell Wilson does for you, and you blew it to a second-year quarterback who has no business carving up your defense like that. And he did. So that's the one, that motivation coming off the loss is one thing that I would be worried about. I want to get your response to that, KC. Plus, 17 years ago today at Arco Arena, one of the biggest moments in sports history. You know what we're talking about. We'll talk about it as we continue here with D'Lo and KC on Sacramento's number one sports station, ESPN 1320.
D'Lo and KC. D'Lo and KC continues on ESPN 1320.
That's Charlie putting in his vote for who number one is of all time. Shout out to Slim Shady, man. Slide out to that man.
Okay. All right, Charlie. Okay. Everybody.
Charlie said that's the guy right there.
It was great as he didn't tell me it was coming, so it caught me completely off guard to hear. Like, why is Eminem playing in my ear? Oh. All right, we're continuing. I think we've done a pretty good job of restraining ourselves from letting this Kenny Caraway, Drake, greatest of all time, take get too out of control here on this Thursday.
It might just take over the second hour. Breaking
if
news.
Bro, if you had, I tell you what, if you had said this on a Tuesday, all bets would be off. But we're here on a Thursday. We're gearing up for a big week in the NFL. We've got football tonight. I do have a – I've got a potential fake trade for you.
Okay.
I'm going to hold off because
– is it a fake trade alert?
It is.
Trade alert.
It is
tragic a tragic Bronson alert.
Indeed, that is full clown music and all. It pertains to tonight's game.
Welcome to the family.
I know. I'm ashamed of myself. And I was about to, as I was putting this thing together, I was like, you know, I could bring this up on the show, and I realized, oh my God. I'm going to propose a fake trade.
Yeah, I'm rubbing off on you. Let's go.
We're spending too much time together, man. That's what's going on. I'm starting to pick up. If I start saying, look.
And then it's over.
It's not going to be too long before I start shadow boxing, you know, during the opening segment of the show just to kind of see how things go.
It'll make you feel better. It made me feel better. Got me loose. I'm ready to go.
Got you all fired up. Okay. Well, 17 years ago, LeBron James began his NBA career right here in Sacramento at the Arco Arena.
Wow.
Were you there? Did you go?
I was not there. No, I wasn't there. I wasn't in the commercial like 90 million people, I guess, in Sacramento were. No, a bunch of people who were in the commercial. I didn't get the memo. I was at home. I was at my grandmother's house, and I had my popcorn ready. Because LeBron James was making his debut, and it was against the Sacramento Kings. But that was must-see TV. Yeah. LeBron James. Like, if we got, like, 15, 16, 17, 18-year-olds listening to D-Lo and KC, it's hard to explain to them the expectations and the phenomenon that was LeBron James coming into the NBA. It wasn't even like Zion. Zion was big, but LeBron was, like, five times bigger than that. And his first game was must-see TV. You had to be in front of your TV.
There's a generation of Kings fans who are going like, well, why was it against the Kings then? Well, 17 years ago, kids, the Kings team was very, very exciting, and it regularly appeared on national television. Like, these are the stories you're going to tell at Christmas time. Yes, once upon a time, Grandpa here was at a Kings game that was on national TV, and not the garbage one that nobody cared about on a Wednesday. I'm talking about a Thursday primetime game matchup. Yeah, I was doing the morning show at KSFM at the time, our sister station here at ESPN 1320, and I remember the show wrapping up going, I got to figure out a way to get to the arena tonight. Like, I've got to see this kid in person. Like, mm-hmm. I saw every, you know, high school game that they ESPN put on. I was just like, there's no freaking way this poor kid can live up to, I mean, the chosen one, all of these different things. Like, they're setting this young man up to fail. Like, I hope he's okay, though. Like, I hope he's good.
Right.
And God bless her, Christina. She handled tickets for the Sacramento Kings. She just happened to be listening. Mm-hmm. And she called the front desk and said, tell Damien to come to will call, or D'Lo, tell D'Lo to come to will call, and we'll leave him two tickets there. Wow. And so I was able, thanks to the Sacramento Kings and Christina, I was able to go to that game. And I'll never, ever, ever forget walking in, and you talk about, I mean, there are crowds. And then there are what was it? You know those shots from, they used to call it media day. Now they call it opening night in the Super Bowl, where it's like Tom Brady and just a swarm of people in a giant circle with cameras and phones, and it was that. Except it wasn't phones yet, so it was cameras and lights and national, and it was maybe, it completely circled LeBron, maybe. Eight deep, like all the way around him. I certainly had never seen anything like it before. I don't think I've seen anything like it since. Mm-hmm. Just surrounding this then 18-year-old player on the floor of the Arco Arena. And this was maybe, this was during, it was regular warm-up, so it was maybe 18 minutes on the clock or so. Mm-hmm. Arena was, full. Nobody was at concession. Nobody was parking. You would have thought the game was entering the fourth quarter. Like, the arena was already packed to see that kid in the kid from Akron, as he says there at the Arco Arena, man. It was quite the experience.
And just think about that. Number one, I mean, because they had to have it lined up. Nike did their first commercial at Arco Arena and things of that nature. But the NBA, with their biggest, their newest big star about to be on center stage, they didn't take him to New York. They didn't take him to Chicago, Miami. They didn't take him to the Lakers. They said, we are going to put him on center stage in Sacramento, California. That's how big the Kings were. The Kings were a global brand. I tweeted it out last week. They were called the greatest show on court for a reason, right? Like, people kind of forget that. It was, oh, cool. No, they were a phenomenon during that time. And a couple of the games, the NBA sent them over to, was that Tokyo?
China. Yeah, they went to China.
They went to China and played that game because they were a big deal, for lack of a better word. I mean, they were the darlings of the NBA. And I think you can bring that back to why David Stern stuck up for the city. Like,
the
Kings. He loved what the Sacramento Kings and the city of Sacramento were.
When the NBA went over there and the Kings went over there, David Stern, I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this properly so it makes sense. He essentially commandeered the Great Wall of China. I'm serious. Like, it was shut down and the NBA held a lunch on the Great Wall of China, like, with tables, wow, like, this whole layout. They shut the Great Wall down to everybody, so the NBA and everybody who made that trip over there with them, including the Sacramento Kings and the people who were with them, could have this lunch on the Great Wall of China.
Wow, that's power.
And
moves.
That was the Kings. Like, that was the freaking, you know, the Sacramento Kings and the Houston Rockets, and that was the, you know, the kind of the early stages of the Yao Ming stuff and the NBA really, you know, kind of ingraining itself into China.
And as we kind of dive into all this, and that game was actually on ESPN. It was on NBA TV last week. I think they had that LeBron day.
Yeah.
We talked about it on the show.
Yeah.
And, you know, Damian, this is just as I think about this and I hear, you know, them going to China and being on center stage, I just really hope this team gets good and gets to a point where they're making the playoffs, because that's what I'd like. That would be dope. That would be awesome. But also so fans can experience a good team and get away from the bitterness of what happened with Vlade Divac, because Vlade Divac and what he means to this city and this franchise, it deserves so much more than where it's probably at today.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think a lot of rational people can separate the two and understand it, but there's some who aren't. And Vlade doesn't deserve that. I don't care
but
who
you know
passed
what?
On or whatever.
I don't think that's how people remember him, though. It's funny you say that. I think it was the last Sacramento Kings podcast I did on the Be Heard platform with Jill Adge, who's, you know, she loves basketball. She's a Kings super fan, and she's my co-host on the show. I asked her, I was like, you know, if once we closed the book, I think it was when the front office had kind of all gotten in place and was like, we closed the book on Vlade once and for all. Mm-hmm. What will you remember Vlade for? And she was like, I'll always remember Vlade as the player, because we lived through that. Like, we lived through when that team was good. Now, if you're younger, you might not be able to do that. You might not be able to remember 2001 or 2 or 3. You might not be able to remember how important Vlade was to everything that went on here in Sacramento. But for people our age, I don't even know. I don't think his time as the general manager is going to crush what all of that was, because as of right now, it's the only time this organization was good.
Yeah.
Like, he was prominent, arguably the most important player.
Yeah.
And I know he wasn't the best player. I'm saying the most important player for that team that was on the court in those early
Absolutely.
Years.
Absolutely. He was the heart and soul. He's the one that chose Sacramento above anybody else. Jason Williams drafted. Chris Webber was traded for. Page was drafted. Mike Bibby was traded for. All these guys were acquired. Vlade was the first. You know, I talked last night about Buddy Hield talking about no free agents ever come to Sacramento. He was the one that came. He was the one that said, I will come to Sacramento. He made it his home. It did not go well. with him being a front office guy, but he deserves so much more than for his legacy to be tainted, you know, the way it has. I mean, it was his own doing and all this other stuff. I get that. I'm not playing that, but he deserves so much more. And I think the only way we'll get back to that for the majority of us is if they're good again. As long as they're bad, it's always going to be, you know, expletive blotty and all this other stuff. You don't need all that. You don't deserve that, man.
I think it's just amplified because Luka's so good. Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of a part of it, too. What's the coolest, like, because I've been lucky. I've been to some pretty dope moments in sports. That's up there. You know, no, especially with historical context, like it was big then. It feels significantly larger now. Like, do you have like a moment that really stands out as to?
Man, I haven't been to a lot of stuff.
I was at the while you pick one out. I was at the Olympics in 2008.
It's not getting any bigger than.
Remember when Usain Bolt turned around and like crossed the line, like looking backwards?
Yeah.
I was at that race. I saw that race live and watching those guys run.
Oh my goodness. They don't get much bigger than that, Damien.
Think a little bit, because I want to bring in Matt Kolsky. You're listening to D'Lo and Casey on KIFM West Sacramento, KRXQ HD2 Sacramento, or radio.com sports station, and driven by Lasher's Elk Grove Dodge. I'm Damien Barling. He's Kenny Caraway. We're happy to be joined by Matt Kolsky, of course, of Damon Ratto and Kolsky, which you can hear 1 hour from now. You can hear him every weekday here from 2 to 6 on ESPN 1320. Matt, LeBron James debuted 17 years ago here in Sacramento. And I'm sure you've had the chance to experience many. What's the coolest moment that you experienced live?
Oh, man. First of all, let's make sure you can hear me, because I am unexpectedly in my car returning from the groomer with my dog. I was hoping to be at the home studio, but there were delays. So as long as you can hear me, I was very lucky. I grew up in Chicagoland in the 90s, and my family had a share of season tickets for the whole decade. So I got to see a lot of Jordan, including some finals games. Sadly, they were all like game fives where, you know, they would go clinch in Utah or Seattle. But that's pretty big. And then I was lucky enough, and it was pretty early in my press pass having career, I was lucky enough to be in the building for the Warriors' first title. And that one, I really, that might be more crystal clear in my memory than any, because I was older and me and my guy Bonte hanging out in seats reserved for writers from the Cleveland Plain Dealer, who I guess didn't show or found somewhere else to sit. And that was a special one.
Nice. Yeah, man, that Bulls in the 90s, I mean, I can only imagine. You know, you're the epicenter of sports, not only the basketball world, but the epicenter of sports, man. And to experience that is pretty cool, man.
It was, I mean, it's probably why we're talking right now. I mean, that really, my love of sports and basketball in particular, which is my truest sports love, it comes from going to see Michael Jordan in person. I mean, I have memories of the Chicago Stadium that might be some of the earliest memories in my life, because I have a notoriously terrible memory. I remember very little of my childhood with any specificity other than going to Chicago Stadium to see the Bulls.
So I also got to ask you, do you have memories of going to see Eddie Curry and Tyson Chandler?
I do. And those are less fond. Other than, I did do an incredible thing. I was way too high on Tyson Chandler when he was drafted. I never loved Eddie Curry, but I was way high on Chandler. And I really rode with him to the point where, you know, in his second or third year, I was talking trash about how Tyson Chandler was still going to be something. You know, he's only 22, like, give him a minute. And my dad got so sick of hearing me, I think, that he essentially taunted me into making a $1,000 bet that I bet that Tyson Chandler would at some point in his career be top three in the league in rebounding.
Oh, man.
And that bet paid me.
I always have love for Tyson Chandler.
Was it with the Hornets or the Mavericks? When did he achieve that?
I think it may actually have been with the Knicks. Like, it wasn't that he was so incredible. He just had one really good year in the rebounding category. And frankly, I think I was way too high on him. The draft tape they showed of him in high school, he looked like Kevin Garnett, for God's sakes. But in retrospect, pretty good career for Tyson.
Absolutely. He was amazing at Dominguez High in Compton. Like, he was a phenom and coming out of high school for sure.
Yep. Find another radio show that's breaking down Tyson Chandler in high school today, and well, I'll give you $1,000.
Well, look, I made sure to stop myself because I was going to ask Kolsky about the what was that Chicago preps show that was kind of like Hoop Dreams? It was like Eddie Curry, Sean Dockery, Will Bynum, and they had another guy. It was like Hoop Dreams, but it was a weekly show. I watched that religiously.
Huh? I don't remember the show. I know all the guys you're talking about. Bynum is my dad has coached girls basketball for a long time, and one of his close friends is a trainer who trains Will Bynum. So I've talked to Will in the past. Cool, tough kid. Really good basketball player. Obviously, you know, fringe NBA player. But love those Chicago Hoopers.
Matt, I think it's fitting that the conversation kind of started with LeBron and Michael Jordan and these different memories, because you had a really interesting conversation with Peter King the other day in which he was singing the praises of Kyle Shanahan, and he did a lot to preface this, like he really didn't want this to become like a clickbait soundbite. But referring to Kyle Shanahan as the potentially the young Bill Belichick, what was your guys' reaction when he said that?
Yeah, like you said, he really couched it, you know. And then I think when we tweeted it out, we may have removed some of the qualifications. But he is just really, I mean, if we really think about it, he's saying what we already know, right? Kyle Shanahan is a good enough coach this early in his career. He's smart enough. There's enough ingenuity and creativity to imagine him having a long, successful career, right? To be the next Bill Belichick, you got to win at least 3 or 4 Super Bowls, I mean, at the very minimum, and, you know, be considered one of the top, 5 or 10 football coaches in the history of the world. I don't think it's not fair to say that's a likely outcome for anybody's career. But if you're going to say you have to pick somebody in the league now, I think Kyle Shanahan's as good a case as anybody, because the other really good coaches, I mean, you know, you'd throw McVay in there, but the other really good, well-established coaches, they're not Belichick-style guys. It's John Harbaugh. It's Mike Tomlin. You know, long-tenured, really solid, coach up a good team every year, but they're not running personnel. They're not breaking the mold of what people are doing in football. They're not these, like, encyclopedic football historian dudes. It's just not the same. So I understand his point, but I think you essentially have the choice. You can either misinterpret what he said, and then it's a big deal, or you can sort of actually take the qualifications, and then it's sort of something we already knew, right? Kyle Shanahan's very good at this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always knew with the X's and O's, and offensively, he was a genius, in my opinion, a football genius. In my opinion, he was a phenom. But the thing that we needed to figure out as a head coach was how he was going to be able to be a leader of men and in dark times, you know, in tough times, like they suffered, you know, in these first couple of weeks with the injuries and things of that nature. And I wanted to see him be able to still lead during those times. And they're not out of the woods yet, but what they've been able to do the last 2 weeks, it seems like he's getting there. Do you think that he's shown enough for you to say that he is that type of Belichick, Tomlin coach, where no matter what's going on, he's the leader, the type of guy that can lead men through dark times and keep their heads above water? You think he's kind of shown that for you?
Well, I mean, yes. The thing about that is, it's... So, I mean, it's hard to say how that plays over a 20-year period. Mm. Right? Like... Mm-hmm. All I can go on is what players say. And his players seem to not just love him, but really rally for him in a way that, I mean, look, very few players are going to come out and trash their coach, but the way they talk about him does sound like he makes a connection that, you know, not every coach does. In a way, it is Belichickian, although, you know, I see the appeal of Kyle much more than I do of Belichick in terms of their public persona. The guys talk about him as like he's this special person who really relates to them, and I think that's meaningful. How long will it last? I don't know, because there's lots of coaches that can be relatable and good for 5 years. How many for 10? How many for 20? I mean, that remains to be seen.
As we look ahead,
but
to
don't
this
you think
weekend.
Early returns are good? Right, like early returns are good.
Yeah, I think so. I questioned it a little bit after the Philly game and the Miami game, but I mean, he's turned that back around with what he's done these last 2 weeks, man, for sure.
You know, it's funny. It's weird to say this because obviously there were a ton of injuries and they got blown out ultimately by Miami. But is it possible that we would look at the entirety of the season differently if we like never heard of Brian Allen?
Very possible.
Like what?
Very possible.
What if they lost? They might have still lost to Miami, but if they had lost 23-17, I don't know that we would have freaked out. We would have been like, man, they got a lot of injuries. I hope they can get healthy and figure some of this out.
That's a great point.
That was mean. That was so mean.
Brian Allen.
Not inaccurate.
It's not his fault, right?
It's not inaccurate. It's just, that's
he'll
tough.
He'll live in 49er infamy up there with A.J. Jenkins and Ruff and Drunken Miller. Like, he's famous for all the wrong reasons.
Tough spot for a practice squad player, man. Really tough spot.
Yeah. That's welcome to the NFL, young man.
Indeed.
Is there outside of Russell Wilson, you know, looking ahead to this game as you guys start to preview it over the next couple of days, is there anything outside of Russell Wilson on that Seattle Seahawks team that you're worried about?
Well, it's yes and no, because the other things you're worried about are all connected to Russell Wilson, right?
Yeah, right.
I mean, but Carlos Hyde doesn't scare me on his own. But, you know, a decent run game, and I do think Hyde is decent, a decent run game is a little scary when Russell Wilson is part of it as well. You know, is Tyler Lockett an incredible receiver like Julio Jones or DeAndre Hopkins, thank you. No, he's not that probably, but he might as well be given the connection he has with Russell Wilson and what they're capable of, particularly on deep throws. And DK Metcalf is a legit monster.
Yeah.
You know, we all saw what he can do as a linebacker, never mind as a wide receiver. So I'm terrified of that offense. And in fact, even though the back end of the Niners defense has been good, as great as Fred Warner has been, they're not getting much of a pass rush, and that's death against Russell Wilson, because if everyone's covered, he will run around you. And he, you know, the Niners have not been great with running quarterbacks. So I'm pretty sure Seattle's going to score a lot. The question is, can the Niners also score a lot? Because that Seattle defense is bad, and the Niners offense has looked pretty good. It just keeps losing the players who look good every week.
Matt, we appreciate you. We'll be tuned in at 2 o'clock to hear more about the 49ers and the Seahawks. Man, thanks for joining us.
Take care, Matt.
Hey, it's always fun to talk to you guys.
All right, we appreciate you. That's Matt Kolsky, of course, of Damon Ratto and Kolsky. That show's coming up here in 45 minutes on ESPN 1320 and on your radio.com app. And that's the point, you know, that's kind of what we've been talking about. Everything that this Seattle Seahawks team does is connected to Russell Wilson. It's the usage rate. It's the NFL usage rate that we were talking about. It's at 100% with Russell Wilson, and they live and die by their quarterback. We'll step out. We'll come back. We're going to have our final baseball conversation of the season, but we're not going to do it alone. We're going to do it with ESPN MLB analyst Jessica Mendoza. She joins us next here as D'Lo and KC continue. Sacramento's number one sports station, ESPN 1320.
Now back to D'Lo and KC. D'Lo and KC. KC on ESPN 1320.
Yes, indeed. Jessica Mendoza set to join us here in just about 3 minutes or so. Great conversation there with Matt Kolsky that you can catch on the radio.com app using the rewind feature. Just came back to 1 o'clock. You know, LeBron James debuting. Sorry.
Well, no, I was just going to say, it seems like Charlie has spoken again. He says Dipset and Cameron is the greatest of all time.
That's not what Charlie made his stance on the greatest rapper of all time clear earlier. We mentioned LeBron James. Our Arco Arena made his debut 17 years ago. You know, it was another really cool Arco Arena moment. And I'm sure it translated on TV, but if you were there, was Kobe's last game with the Kobe's last game. It was at Arco Arena. It was, because you know how Laker fans are.
Obnoxious.
You know it was packed with Laker fans.
Yeah.
And the Kings were up. If memory serves me correctly, the Kings were up by like 20. Like, they were just stomping the Lakers. Kobe goes out, and everybody kind of senses there's going to be a big Kobe chant. He's going to come in. He's going to play a couple of minutes. Then he's going to get the curtain call, and he's going to leave. Mm-hmm. The Lakers make a run. And I'm sitting, I had a pretty good seat for this one. And I remember as this run is happening, I'm like, oh no, I know what he's going to do. He's going to tell them to stay out there and run. And I'm looking over at the bench. And finally I see Kobe, I see Kobe look, he gives the look and he shakes his hand. He just goes, nah, mm-mm. Wow. Let him go. He goes, let him go. And he sits down and he takes off his shoes. And I'm like,
oh,
no,
damn.
But it was so loud in the arena because there were so many Laker fans that every possession, no matter who scored, it was like this thundering sound within that old arena. And it was I remember the Kings wound up winning, and I can't remember who said it, but they were like, yeah, that felt like a loss because the Lakers were really bad.
Yeah.
And they completely blew that lead. But it was so, so loud in the building. And all I could think of is, yo, we just got robbed out of Kobe's, like, farewell. We just got robbed out of, like, Kobe's curtain call. And once the game was over, people, I think, got it. Once they got out of the moment, they were like, oh, crap, Kobe's not playing anymore.
Right.
And then they started cheering and chanting Kobe and all that. But that was a really cool moment to be at also.
And Kobe really, really loved coming to Sacramento. He loved destroying the Kings here in Sacramento. But, I mean, he had immense respect for Sacramento, Arco Arena, and everything that it meant. So that was cool to have that from a guy like Kobe Bryant, have that type of respect. I was trying to think about, you know, maybe my greatest moments. I mean, I went to Mayweather-Victor Ortiz, and that was like a nondescript fight, but it ended up being the protect yourself at all time fight
when
Victor Ortiz headbutted him. Floyd came back and gave him a 1-2 piece and knocked him out. That led to the all-time post-fight press or question and answer segment with what's my man's name? Oh, my gosh, I'm drawing a blank. Well, Larry Merchant. And he told him, you know, you don't know S about boxing and HBO should fire you and all this other stuff.
Yeah.
And I couldn't hear any of that live because the crowd was going crazy. Like, they were going insane with boos and all this other stuff. It was a great moment. Went to a couple of We Believe Warriors playoff games. That was pretty cool. This isn't like an alt. I went to the first game at Arco after they were like officially saved. And Vivek said, Sacramento, this is your team. Right. And that was a pretty cool moment.
Well, speaking of this is your team, let's bring in ESPN Major League Baseball analyst Jessica Mendoza. She just got to call her first World Series and she got to call it for her favorite team. I got to imagine that made the first of all, Jessica, thanks for joining us. I got to imagine that made the experience all that much better.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. What an amazing, amazing World Series, too, by the way, and even down to the last ending. But it was really fun to be a part of. It was pretty cool.
Is it hard not to, like, cheer? Because you're a fan. I mean, you're a Southern California girl. Like, is it hard not to be excited when your team wins the World Series? And you're calling the game?
Yeah. It's funny because, like, I didn't really have any set emotion about it, like, calling and being a part of it until, like, until the end, after the game was over and we're still on air, and you just, like, you know, there was a shot of Kershaw, you know, just the hugs, and all of a sudden, like, I was like, oh my gosh, like, this is so cool. And you get to know the player. I mean, obviously you get to know all the players, and but there were times, I'm going to be honest, throughout the series, like, my heart was pulling for the Rays. Like, I was like, come on, like, even, like, when they came back in game four, I flew out of my seat and jumped. I almost hit my head on the ceiling. Like, I was that high in the air. You guys get this. You just become a fan of the game, right? So you just want, you know, gosh, an even series. You want it to be competitive. You love great dramatic endings. So it wasn't until, I guess, all of that was over and I wasn't really calling it anymore. We were just kind of watching everyone celebrate that I was like, oh, man, this is really cool.
Well, Jessica, I'm just stepping in as a Giants fan to say that Damian is going to conduct the rest of this interview because I'm boycotting all Dodger fans for the next 4 months.
Kenny's still in his feelings a little
already,
bit. Jess,
don't
mind him.
it's not personal, Jessica. It's just the whole community of Dodger. I'm just joking. You're more than fine. So when you talk about this past World Series, they had some great moments in it, and I came out of this saying, I don't know if he's the best player in baseball because Mike Trout is still down there in Anaheim doing what he does, but Mookie Betts, I mean, at the very least, is he the face of Major League Baseball right now?
Gosh, I would say when people think of the best, like, player that they've seen play the game this year, it's hard to pick the face because I honestly feel like Clayton Kershaw might have taken that just because the Dodgers won. And you look at all the post media of who this Dodgers team was, and it was Clayton Kershaw. So I feel like almost the face becomes right now Clayton Kershaw. But Mookie Betts, yeah, I mean, the way he played even up until that final game, I mean, the double, obviously Blake Snell coming out of the game, but the double that Mookie Betts got to get things going and then basically stealing home on that weak ground ball and the home run to cap it off. I literally was like, what else can this guy do? Like, can this guy not do? Like, it's crazy. Like, so, yeah, I mean, I feel like when you talk around, like, who's the best player, and even who people first come to mind, my own kids, I got home, and they're all just the biggest Mookie Betts fans now to kind of answer that. Because, unfortunately, you just can't see Mike Trout in the most important time of the year.
Yeah, yeah.
Jessica, I'm sure you've answered this question in some way, shape, or form over the last couple of days, so I'm not going to pretend to be creative with it. But Blake Snell and the decision to pull him out, when does the eye test have to override the analytics here?
That moment. Right now, that would have been
it. Best analyst in the business, folks, right there.
Yeah, no, even I'm not trying to, but like when, you know, calling the game, we had the conversation. Dan Shulman, who was doing play-by-play, did an awesome job of kind of setting up that inning. So even the inning prior in the fifth, he's like, guys, do you think the Blake Snell will face the top of this order? And everybody was like, no. And I'm like, if he's still dealing in the sixth, like, he needs to stay in this game. So it was like, okay, well, we will see. So Nick Anderson's in the bullpen in the sixth. We're having the conversation. We're like, I don't know, if nobody gets on, then Austin Barnes gets the base hit. And I said right there, I'm like, do not bring Nick Anderson into this game. And my biggest reasoning wasn't even so much like Blake Snell looked so good right in that moment. It was just the at-bats against Mookie Betts and Corey Seager and Justin Turner, the top of the order. Yes, it's the third time. The numbers are stupid. I get it. But they missed the ball by like a foot. I mean, his stuff was so good. But I know what that's like to be on deck when a pitcher comes out with dominating. And I can't tell you, like, I wasn't in Mookie Betts' shoes, but I can pretty much guarantee that he was like, heck yes. You just took him out of this game. Like, I don't care who you brought out of the bullpen. I feel so much better knowing that the guy that just made me look stupid in my last two at-bats is out of this game.
Right. And Jessica, I love baseball. I absolutely love baseball, but I'm having a hard time dealing with the direction that it's going. And that was like the microcosm of everything that's kind of going on with baseball right now, where I kind of had a come to Jesus moment. And I looked at something like that, taking Blake Snell out in October in the World Series when he's having an historic moment. And I'm like, with the analytics and stuff like that, it's not the game I fell in love with. Like, this isn't, I love baseball, but this ain't the baseball I fell in love with. What does Major League Baseball do, if anything, moving forward, because you got guys like me who are falling out of love with the game, and the way they're going about it now, it's not like it's bringing new fans in. What do they do moving forward?
I think you have to manage the way that you have to change the way that bullpens are used. You have to be able to limit the net amount of pitchers that are carried, the amount that are allowed on a roster. I mean, with an expanded roster, everyone just adds more pitchers. I mean, I did the NLCS. Each team had 14 pitchers. 14 pitchers. So, like, I mean, in the game alone, you look at the flip side. The Dodgers use, what, I think 7 pitchers? Wow. So, like, and the point is, like, because you can have so many arms back there, that the numbers will tend to dictate, because more times than not, yes, like, you want to bring in this guy for this matchup in the top of the line, because that's how Tampa Bay got to the World Series. Yeah. So I think what Major League Baseball has to do, because it's not going to change, because even though they made the wrong decision, they will have more success probably going by the numbers more times than not. And that's just flat out, like, that's what the numbers show. So if they show that, more teams are going to do it, and you're just going to see it more and more and more and more. I don't think it changes, even with the Blake Snell backlash and everyone disagreeing with the decision. I think even Kevin Cash at this point realizes it was the wrong decision. But when they come back to it, I think they do it again. And that's because that's where the game is. Until, like, I firmly believe Major League Baseball has to change the ability for just bullpen guys should be back there for the back end of games. For literally, like, we need to close this thing out. We need them in the seventh, eighth, and ninth. And our starting pitcher, we're going to ride them. And if something happens, maybe we have one length guy that we need. But not to where we're pulling guys in the fourth and fifth innings and just going straight to the bullpen.
Jessica, you've been in gold medal games. You've played at the highest levels imaginable. Can you put yourself in Justin Turner's shoes?
Yes, I can. And I say that saying, would I be selfless? it's hard to not picture, like, if there's a gold medal back out there and I'm playing in the Olympic Games and I've worked every day of my life to not run back on that field, which is why I say, and this comes from every leadership in every position, whether it's, you know, whether it's political, whether it's within sports, but, like, you cannot leave it up to the individual. You can't. Yeah. Because individuals can be stupid. They can make the wrong decision. I would have probably made the wrong decision because the candy jar is sitting in the same room. You're telling me not to eat it? Like, you can't leave it up. You have to be able, in my opinion, Major League Baseball should have put Justin Turner, the moment he tested positive, in a car and sent him back to the hotel. Because you're going to put him in a room by himself and tell him, no, sorry, you can't go back onto that field. I get that, like, you can tell him one thing, but, like, you have to understand that the power is too strong and you need to get him out of that stadium. And that's just leadership. And then once he's out there, someone's got to be the big boy to go and grab him and not just tell him to get off the field. But instead, you leave it up to him, you leave it up to the Dodgers, and, like I say, on every level, you need leadership. You need someone from the top telling you not to do this. If you leave it up to just people, you're going to get people that make the wrong decision.
Yeah. Jessica, one last thing I want to ask you in a big picture sense. I know, you know, we don't know what's going on with COVID and how long that's going to last or whatever. So, but the Major League Baseball, the powers that be, they know that they can play, you know, during this time. You know, they can pull this off. With that being said, do we start on time next year?
Oh my gosh, you're going to go there? I'm trying to figure out if college basketball is going to be here.
Like, I know, right?
What's going to happen with the Super Bowl? Like, Honestly, I did not think we'd get to the World Series. I did not. When the Marlins had the entire team pretty much wiped out from COVID, I was like, this is a nightmare. And I don't think we even get to October, and we did. So I think, as we all know, no one can predict. I mean, vaccines or not, I mean, we don't even know what's going to happen by January, let alone, you know, March when spring training starts, February. So I'd love to say yes or no, but I thought about it. When we said bye to our whole crew, our whole baseball crew at ESPN, we're all like, when are we going to see each other again? Normally it'd be like, see you in spring training, see you in February. But there is for sure doubt that February, March, and spring training is going to look like normal. You know, whether that means they start on time, they don't, they're in a bubble or not, like, who knows? But I can't, honestly, I can't get past this year. Think about next year.
Yeah, see you later has started to mean see you on the next Zoom call.
That's right.
What it means. We appreciate you so much, Jessica. Congratulations on calling the World Series, and thanks again for joining us. We really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
All right, that's Jessica Mendoza, ESPN Major League Baseball analyst.
Very cool.
Hey, you know, she is the first high-level athlete I've heard basically reprimand Justin Turner. Mm. Every football player, everybody heard, you know, I heard, you got to recognize these guys are in this position. They've worked so hard for this. She acknowledged everything that all of those other athletes acknowledged. Mm-hmm. But she's the only one who said that's totally inappropriate. Like, mm-hmm. you can't do that. She's the first one I've heard say it.
Yeah, and it's surprising that she is the first one because I can put myself in Justin Turner's shoes. I understand where he's been. I think I mentioned it yesterday. He's one of the longest tenured Dodgers. He's been through a lot, if not all, of the heartbreak that they've had in this run that they've had, and he's finally getting to that moment. I get it, but there's no way you can do what he did. No way. Life sucks, right? Life ain't fair. You know what I'm saying? And man, it's not fair that you can't celebrate when you guys finally reach the pinnacle. But that's life. That doesn't give you an excuse to go out there and do something as reckless and as selfish as he did.
See, and that's the thing.
It's inexcusable.
Like, yeah, it's not fair. It's also not fair that stimulus checks aren't coming.
Right?
It's also not fair that the unemployment department can't process unemployment payments fast enough. You know what I mean? Like, it's not fair that we don't know when life is going to return to normal, whatever the hell normal means anymore. That's not fair either. But hey, Justin Turner, professional athletes, you're not immune to the cyclone of destruction that has become the year 2020.
Mm-hmm.
So sorry that you missed out on celebrating with your teammates. But hey, by all means, go sit next to your manager without a mask on, who's a freaking cancer survivor. And it's already been well established that those people in that type of recovery are at the greatest risk of all this. But please, go ahead.
And you know what, Damien? Even if I wanted to give him some type of G pass here and say, all right, you just had to go back on the field, cool. It's not cool, but even I'm going to just play devil's advocate.
On a hazmat suit.
Stand 20 feet away. He went out and hugged everybody, kissed people, dapped people up. Like, that was crazy. That was crazy. Stand on the warning track on the sidelines. Give fist bumps or, you know, fist in the air, air daps, all this other stuff, yell, spray champagne on yourself. Like, do all that. Why are you hugging every person you come in contact with?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
And I know we haven't really touched on this yet. I don't know what to do with this. It's not a story. Baseball is a regional sport. This isn't in our region, but he is a former Oakland A's manager. Tony La Russa, 70 freaking 6 years old.
Mm.
And he is the new manager of the Chicago White Sox.
Wow. Well, congratulations to him, I guess, if that's what he wanted to do. I don't know. Tony La Russa, we'll see, man.
Can
we
modify?
Whose
grandpa is this?
It's grandpa.
That was inappropriate. I'm sorry. That was actually a joke from Charlie. Charlie gets full credit of that. Thank you, Charlie.
Topics, two arguments, no winners. One-on-one with D'Lo and Casey.
All right, let's keep it moving here. If you missed our conversation with Jessica Mendoza, you can go to the radio.com app, use the rewind feature, scroll back to about 1:20 or so. It'll be right there for you. Or you could check back later on in the day when the D'Lo and Casey podcast is live exclusively on your radio.com app. As we keep it moving here, you asked Jessica Mendoza about the next MLB season. How about the next NBA season? There had been a deadline tomorrow to come up with what the start date for the next NBA season would be. And Michelle Roberts, the executive director of the National Basketball Players Association, said, no. The union and the players are analyzing all of the information, and we will not be rushed. This comes on the heels of a Chris Haynes tweet that said a stable of players and star players, which is very important in the NBA, said that there's a push for MLK Day. There's a push for January 18th to be the start date rather than December 22nd, rather than taking advantage of the December 25th date, their biggest day of the year. They want to take advantage of their second biggest day of the year and perhaps turn it into something even bigger. There's even been speculation. I think this was Danny Green who said on a recent podcast that if we start December 22nd, you can expect some pretty big names to likely miss a big chunk of time to start the season. Obviously, Danny Green played for the Los Angeles Lakers. It doesn't take a wild imagination to figure out who he may be talking about. But the plan was for 72 games. I guess it's worth repeating this for those who are unaware. The plan is proposed by the NBA, presented to the Board of Governors. So from the NBA league office to the team of the team's governors was 72 games December 22nd. Players seem to be pushing back on that just a little bit, and I don't think that's a big surprise. That gives us training camp beginning, for goodness sakes, in 1 month. That seems incredibly far-fetched given that we just saw the end of the NBA season and we just saw the first ever NBA bubble come to a conclusion.
Yeah. Well, look, we talked about real life, right? And this is a situation in real life where I understand 100% where the players are coming from. I feel like a compromise of January 21st or whenever MLK Day is this year, I think that's fair. But they also have to realize, and maybe they do, that the bag won't be as big. Yeah. You know, if you don't have Christmas and if you're starting later, there's also a situation where I don't know how the bag, as we love to call it, is affected by playing 72 games as opposed to maybe that turns into 66 or 60 games if you play on MLK Day. That may affect it. It may be a smaller amount of money that they're able to get.
Well, I don't think there's a maybe about it. Like, you lose those five games,
and then you're losing 4 or 5 weeks of the season.
Yeah, that feels like not only would it, that feels like it'd be a substantial amount of money that is lost.
Yeah, so if you, everything's give and take. If that's what you want to do as a Players Association and start on MLK Day, money's going down. Money's going down. That's just what it is. I personally, I'm gonna just be honest with you. If I was in the player's shoes, I'm not telling them nothing. I'm not saying you have to do this or nothing like that. I'm just saying, me personally, I'd probably suck it up because I need to get as much of that bag as I can for the season. So I'd suck it up, start on December 22nd. There'll be a bunch of, with load management games and things of that nature. And the owners are going to have to accept that. They're going to have to accept that the players may take a month off. You know, some of your big players might take a month off because of the schedule. Everything's give and take here.
Let's dissect that for a second. What impact does load management have on a season in which fans aren't paying to get into the games?
That's true. It could affect ratings, which could affect your next TV deal.
It, which is a ways away. It affects the next TV deal, and that's the thing that, you know, despite the number of organizations who have tried to spin what recent NBA ratings mean, it's clear that sports across the board are down. The World Series was down. And not only are sports down, television in general is down. Yeah. And we talk, you and I, we can let the rating system in television and in radio it's a weird thing. And what doesn't come into play is stuff like YouTube, Hulu, your Peacock app. You know, like all of the different places that you ESPN Plus, all of the different places that you consume media now, that you consume sports or even, you know, regular media. Yeah. It's not the same old antenna on your ears with five stations to choose from. It's different.
2020.
And so we've learned this entire year with people's minds being away from their entertainment, away from dispensable income, which I'm confident in this country has been virtually eliminated for probably over 90% of the people, that sports, television, their favorite TV shows, Blackish, whatever show you watch, it's not a priority anymore.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right. And I just, like I said, I think with this, both sides are going to have to sacrifice a little bit. Yeah. I think, and look, I'm all for player safety and all this other stuff. So that they don't feel comfortable and they want to start on January 21st, by all means, more power to you. It's all good. But just know that the money's going to be different. That's all I'm saying about that. And if they're okay with that, then cool. Let's just start in January. If they're not okay with that, you're going to have to lace them up and start a little earlier than maybe you want to. So
and this is the tale of two NBAs. Like, is it far-fetched to think the Golden State Warriors are itching to play basketball? Or, hell, Brooklyn. Is Brooklyn itching to play basketball?
Yeah.
Are the Sacramento Kings itching to play basketball? Like, are they ready to get out there and do their thing? Versus the Miami Heat, who don't even want to look at a basketball.
Right.
LeBron James doesn't even want to hear the word basketball as the rest of the Lakers do, and as I can't even remember who those two teams beat in the conference finals. But, you know, you start to think about those teams, and maybe they just need to get away for a little while. But you have other teams who are like, no, I want to go play.
Yeah.
I'm ready to get out there and play. And it's going to create a unique – or I shouldn't say it's going to. I wonder if it's going to create like this unique, not contentious, but a division of some sort with teams, depending on what their role was in the bubble, assuming, of course, they had one.
Yeah. I think the best course of action here, the most fair course of action here, in my opinion, they start on December 21st or 22nd or whatever that day is. Mm-hmm. And that's when they start. And everybody kind of realizes your Lakers, your Heats, your Celtics, your Nuggets.
Yeah.
You guys handle that first month and a half the way you guys see fit. If that means LeBron plays on Christmas and then doesn't play for another 3 weeks, and, you know, same with Kawhi and Jamal Murray and all that, so be it. You know what I mean? That's just kind of what it is. You guys do what you got to do. But yeah. I think for the big picture, everything involved, I think December 22nd is probably when they should start.
Yeah, it's so tough because the difficult part about that, and that's kind of what I advocated for, you know, take advantage of load management and all that stuff. But if you're a guy like LeBron, if you're an elite player like that, mm-hmm. and if you're an older player, like we just said, LeBron's celebrating 17th anniversary of debuting at Arco Arena. That's old. That's old in the NBA. That's old in any walk of life.
Yeah,
it's difficult to ramp yourself up and then go, okay, I got ready for December, say 22nd, got my ring. Of course, I'm going to play December 25th. That's a huge money game for us. Mm-hmm. But then I'm going to chill until we get to January 18th. It's difficult to get your mind and your body in that mm-hmm. frame of performing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's definitely.
I don't know that
issue.
There's an easy solution to this.
There isn't. No, there isn't, because there's going to be cons to all scenarios. So just got to figure out which one is the best one. What's best for business for everybody involved, because the players are a business as well, so got to do what's best for business. Damien, the Super Bowl, they're planning to have fans in there. Now, I know earlier, maybe this month or something like that, the Tampa Bay mayor or the governor of Florida said he expected full capacity at Raymond James Stadium in Tampa, Florida. Vince McMahon, we're going back to Tampa, Florida for WrestleMania because they're going to have full capacity. Well, the NFL pulled a Lee Corso and said, not so fast, my friend. Okay? The NFL said that they are planning for 20% seating capacity for the Super Bowl on February 7th at Raymond James Stadium in Tampa, Florida. This is according to ESPN. Fans will be in pods separated by 6 feet, and masks will be required in accordance with the COVID-19 safety protocols. The capacity of Raymond James Stadium is 65,890. So that will put slightly around 13,000 fans in the building, as opposed to the 75,000 they thought they were going to get. The way you see this going down come February 7th?
There's so many things wrong with this. First, there are masks required at AT&T Stadium, too, in Dallas.
How's that working out?
Watch the next Cowboys game, would you? Two, this is a strategic move by the NFL, and I will tiptoe around this and say, one, Tuesday, go vote. If you filled out your ballot, go drop it off now.
Mm.
Two, they're waiting for Tuesday to come and go.
Mm.
And depending on – because things could change – between now and the Super Bowl. I know you feel where I'm going with this.
Yeah.
Things could change between now and the Super Bowl. If things don't change, oh, you bet 75,000 people here at Raymond J. Stadium for Super Bowl and for WrestleMania.
Yeah.
But there could be some people in offices who step in and say, no, we can't do that. I'm fascinated at the thought of pods. I'm trying to envision.
That's kind of weird.
13,000 pods. And here's the other thing. The Super Bowl isn't made up of fans.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if there's 75, like how many fans are actually in attendance at the Super Bowl? Those are corporations.
Yeah.
Those are corporate sponsors. Those are tickets that are given out by corporations and corporate sponsors. Like, The reason Super Bowl tickets are so expensive is not because, oh, it's just the greatest game of the year. No, it's because there's like 10 of them.
Right.
That haven't been allocated to Pepsi or to Coke or to Miller Lite or Bud Light or whoever these sponsors are. Like, so if you're the NFL, how do you choose what sponsors get these 13,000 tickets? You already have a difficult enough time when there's 75,000 to give away.
Right.
How difficult is it going to be when you only have 13,000 to give away?
If there's 13,000 fans in attendance and essentially 13,000 tickets available, any ticket that does hit the open market is going to go for like $10,000. Like, if you compare that to, they already go for thousands of dollars when there's 70,000 people available. Just right. Imagine 13,000. That's going to be like a $10,000 ticket.
I can't.
It's crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah. The NFL is such a place, such an interesting place. Hey, we've been pretty hard, maybe me more specifically than you, a little hard on Julian Edelman. We might have some answers as to why he's played so poorly.
Okay.
We speculated, perhaps, what's the word that you used?
Washed.
We speculated that perhaps that was the case. Maybe it is. But it turns out he's been dealing with a knee injury all year, so much to the case of he is out this upcoming week, and he's going to be out probably for the next couple of weeks as he had, quote, a knee procedure. My guess is he had arthroscopic surgery where they stick the little camera in there with a little vacuum. They go around and clean up, and perhaps that speaks as to why he hasn't played well. My question to you here as we roll along on D'Lo and KC is this Julian Edelman's final season with the New England Patriots?
I think it is, and I respect the fact that he had a knee procedure and his knee's not 100% or whatever the case may be. The guy's still washed. All right, it is what it is. He's done. He's washed. I think the Patriots will move on from him. Will he get picked up is the question. Will he get picked up by another team?
They clear $4 million, according to our friends over at SpotTrack. They clear $4 million off the 2021 books if they let him go this offseason.
Yeah, that's a foregone conclusion. And will he go the way of Wes Welker, where Wes Welker just one day wasn't in the league anymore?
He was gone. Well, yeah. He wasn't washed, though. He was
Concussions, didn't he?
He was in danger. Yeah, he had that weird helmet that was, it was funny to look at because it was just shaped completely differently than everybody.
What was the guy in the Flintstones that people would say his helmet was like? The little green alien. Gazoo? Oh, I think that was his name.
You're
not a Flintstones guy?
I'm not.
Oh, wow.
I was never a Sunday morning cartoon guy. Yeah.
Well, I didn't watch those. I'm not that old, Damien. I didn't watch those Sunday morning. It was more Cartoon Network. It was more Boomerang.
Okay, dude, calm down. Okay, settle down. We're separated by like less than 3 years. Just relax there a little bit, Tiger. Like, you were alive for Sunday morning cartoons, man.
Yeah,
knock it off.
The Flintstones didn't come on Saturday morning cartoon. It was more like X-Men.
I'm not talking about the original run of the Flintstones. I'm not talking about the debut episode, for God's sakes.
My goodness. But anyway, I think it was Gazoo, and that's the helmet that Wes Welker had on. He had the Gazoo helmet.
Yeah, I think Wes Welker was left off rosters for his own safety. Yeah. Julian Edelman, I don't think is there yet. Someone will take a flyer on him. And I'm with you, by the way. I don't think he's going to be a member of the Patriots next year.
49ers wide receiver coach Wes Welker. Doing a great job with these guys. Okay. Shout out to him.
Yeah.
Last but not least, it's Thursday. You know, we got Marshall tomorrow, and it's a 49er Friday. And I actually forgot to put this in the rundown. Sorry, partner. So I'm catching you completely off guard. But, you know, that's my opportunity to talk about boxing. Close your ears, Danny. Close your ears, okay? Boxing, big time fight going on this Saturday. My main man, Gervonta Tank Davis, going up against Leo Santa Cruz. Damien, I know it's supposed to be champagne and campaigning. We had to change plans, but are you going to find a way to see Tank Davis, one of boxing's biggest stars, go up against Leo Santa Cruz this Saturday night?
On consecutive Saturdays, I have watched boxing because of you. I haven't watched boxing in years.
You're the new Teddy Atlas. Yeah, you watch everything.
If you tell me that this is that important, I will watch it.
It is definitely important.
You only get two of these a year.
Here's the caveat.
Okay.
It's on pay-per-view.
No, I know. Oh. I know you told me that. I'm okay with that.
Okay.
That's why you get the brand.
Okay, I see you.
That's why you get two of these a year. Is it important enough for me to order on pay-per-view?
Yes, this is one of boxing's
stars.
Okay. This is the guy they're saying he's like the new Mike Tyson. That's what they're saying Tank Davis
is. Wait, what?
Yeah, man. That's what he does to people.
Okay.
That's what he does to people.
There's a couple of things next week we're going to really start diving into, because you know we're going heavy on the NFL tomorrow. We're going heavy on the 49ers tomorrow. Mm-hmm. Marshall Harris is going to join us, as he always does. So starting next week, we're going to really start diving into the NBA draft, and we got a couple of really dope ideas we think that you're going to be excited about. So we're going to really start diving into Sacramento Kings basketball and potential Sacramento Kings draft picks beginning next week. We're going to lay out the schedule over the course of the next couple of days, but we're really excited about that. But I don't want this to pass.
Oh, let's go.
We've got football tonight. Unfortunately, Christian McCaffrey is not going to play. He did return to practice. At least sources say he's not going to play. I don't know that he's officially been announced by Matt Rhule as inactive for tonight, but I think the belief is because of a Thursday night game that he's not going to play. The Panthers are taking on the Atlanta Falcons.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Here is my question to you.
Yeah.
Can you think you've got Matt Ryan here, capable of throwing for 5,000 yards?
Yeah.
I got a proposition.
Vince McMahon has entered the building.
I'll send you some draft capital. Send Matt Ryan to the Dallas Cowboys.
Vince McMahon meets his Jerry Jones.
So yeah, they're kind of the same. Like my Vince McMahon sound is kind of the same as my Jerry Jones sound. For no reason, because Jerry Jones doesn't sound like Vince McMahon, but
Jerry is more like this, and
yeah.
Come on, if you shut up, I've got to answer your question. Exactly. You know, that's more like Jerry right there. But I love when Vince comes on the show. I think that's a good that's a good deal, but I'm going to tell you this. It's a good Jerry Jones deal. Because Jerry Jones will look at it like, yeah, if we get Matt, if we get Matt, we'll be back next year. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if we're giving up draft picks and we don't have a defense, we'll be back.
No. You've missed it. You missed it. Jerry Jones thinks if he acquires Matt Ryan now, he'll be good.
He's talking about this year.
He's
talking
about
the playoffs this year.
Have you seen the division? You know that battle.
You're right, and he's right.
Is it Sunday night?
Yeah.
That battle is for first place of the NFC East.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. Yes.
What's his name? DiNucci? DiNucci?
Man,
what is
new
his
Romo.
Name?
Ben DiNucci, the new Romo, the new Tony Romo.
Starting quarterback for the Dallas Cowboys. I guarantee you, in Jerry Jones, Stephen Jones, in their mind, they're thinking, if we go get Matt Ryan.
And they're talking about, when you're proposed trade, they're talking about giving up picks?
Yeah, that's what Jerry does.
Oh, goodness. Look, as a 49er fan, I hope they make that trade. I really hope that comes true.
We thank Matt Kolsky for being with us. We thank Jessica Mendoza for being with us. And most importantly, we thank you for being with us. It is a 49er Friday. Mm-hmm. Make sure that you are locked in with us here on 1320. Make sure that you are locked in with us here on the radio.com app. Again, thank you so much for being with us. Damon Ratto and Kolsky are coming up next here on Sacramento's number one sports station, ESPN 1320.
D'Lo and Casey on the home for Sacramento Sports Talk, ESPN 1320.